The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with John Couch, John engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to Buckmaster on the 19th of September, 2019, Thursday afternoon, listening to 1030 Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Of course, we've got all of our programs archived. The podcast is there for you. You can listen on your schedule 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. The live line number now declared officially open. Any questions about air travel or Tucson International Airport, now would be a great time to call us at 790-2040, because it's time for our quarterly Tucson International Airport update, where we update air service. Dick Runzel is with me in studio. Dick, Vice President of Administration and Finance. He's the Chief Financial Officer for the Tucson Airport Authority, which oversees the operations of the Tucson International Airport and Ryan Airfield as well. Dick, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Bill. Thanks.
Good numbers on tourism just released by my friend Dan Gibson over at Visit Tucson. Dan put out this news release just about an hour ago, Dick. Visit Tucson generating $238 million in direct spending. That's pretty darn good. That's for that fiscal year, the 12 months ending July 1st. So obviously, Dick Runzel, we've got more visitors coming to town. And how is that reflected out at the airport?
Yeah, I mean, and it is, first of all, Visit Tucson is just such a great partner with the airport. It definitely has a major impact on the airport. You know, we have done surveys that indicate, you know, anywhere up to about 70% of the passengers going through Tucson International are leisure travelers. So that obviously is people who live in Tucson as leisure travelers, but also people coming into Tucson as leisure travelers. So, you know, tourism is definitely the largest driver of the traffic at the airport, and that's really reflected, you know, the success that Visit Tucson is having, attracting additional visitors, is definitely reflected in our numbers over the last two or three years. We've had really tremendous growth, and in our current fiscal year, which is through 11 months through August, you know, we're seeing 7% increase in our total number of passengers compared to last year.
And the air service looks very good, very promising. We're coming up to the primetime season. Let's begin with Allegiant. They're making a commitment now to Indianapolis.
Yeah, they started last year in November with two routes, twice a week to Provo, Utah, and twice a week to Bellingham, Washington, which is just outside of Vancouver, British Columbia, and Canada. The Bellingham route ended up, made that a seasonal route. Provo has continued year-round. And now this November, in addition to, you know, Provo continues, Bellingham coming back and in October, and now they've also added a third destination to Indianapolis, and that's going to be starting November 14th, and that will also be two times a week, and in this case with Indianapolis on Thursdays and Sundays.
And that is a new destination for Tucson.
First time destination to Indianapolis, so we're really, really excited about that. You know, we all know that there's a lot of people who live in Tucson who are from the Midwest, and also a lot of visitors from the Midwest. You know, Midwest and Pacific Northwest, I think people tend to more come to the southwestern part of the U.S., whereas people on the East Coast tend to more go to the Florida area. So, you know, we think just about any route to the Midwest, I think, is going to do well for Tucson.
And for those that are going to the Indiana area, they don't need to go to Chicago, but Chicago is going to get another United flight, right?
Yes. You know, a couple of years ago, United joined both American, who already flies to O'Hare in Chicago, and then Southwest, who flies to Midway. But United joined them a couple years ago, and then they ran into a little bit of a hiccup with the 737 MAX aircraft, which made them reduce some flights, and it kind of had a domino effect, which resulted in them suspending their flights to Chicago for a little bit. But those will be coming back on October 5th. And I think once that 737 MAX issue gets sorted out, indications are good that at least seasonally, United will be flying twice a day to Chicago. And hopefully, they'll look at doing that year-round.
Is Frontier coming back to Denver?
Yes, Frontier started again last year flying to Denver. Returned to Tucson flying to Denver. And last year they did four flights a week. This year they're going to come back with three flights per week, and that's coming back on November 21st. And I think they plan on flying that through about the first part of April. But having a low-cost carrier like Frontier, especially on routes competing with Southwest and United, who also fly to Denver, really can result in some excellent fares.
Boy, these numbers are going to look good, I think, in November. Then we've got Alaska twice daily. Most days, right, to Portland starting in November?
Yeah, Alaska has been flying once a day seasonally, typically, going from about October or November through the following April or May. And then they don't run that flight typically, during the summer months. But this year, when they bring back service to Portland on November 7th, shortly after that, they're going to increase that to two times a day during the busy season. And, we've been talking with Alaska for forever that, really we need at least one Portland flight year round.
Yeah, that would be great.
Everybody, from the Pacific Northwest likes to come to Tucson during the high tourist season. But people from Tucson.
We like to go up there.
Exactly.
To the Oregon coast and up to the Northwest. It's such a destination that is so attractive.
Exactly.
To us in the summertime.
Yeah.
So if we could get them beyond this thinking about Tucson as a seasonal destination.
And that is the challenge.
Yeah.
The airlines tend to think about routes in terms of which is the larger city on the end of the route. And in this case, Portland is the larger city. So they tend to look at it from Portland's perspective.
Yes.
And we're constantly reminding them that they also need to be thinking about the Tucson side of the equation.
And here's another busy one that's going to start up on November the 3rd, daily service on Delta to Minneapolis.
And this is just another one exactly like Portland. Delta flies the route seasonally during the busy season, and then they suspend it during the summer. Same situation. Everybody from Tucson would love to go to Minneapolis during the summer to cool off.
But the planners up in the Twin Cities are thinking, well, everybody up in the Twin Cities, they think of Tucson as a winter destination.
That's exactly. It gets very frustrating.
I bet it is. Sun Country, are they going to compete on that route?
Yeah, yes, they will. They'll be coming back and flying Minneapolis again seasonally three times per week starting December 18th, similar to last year, and they'll be running that again through probably early to mid-April.
Now, getting back to Seattle and that market, Delta twice daily to Seattle beginning around Christmas.
Right.
So that's going to beef up service from Tucson to four flights a day with Alaska and Delta.
Exactly. Alaska has been flying at least one flight to Seattle year-round practically forever, it seems like. And then starting a number of years ago, Alaska started flying two times a day during the busy season. And now Delta, probably two or three years ago, started with one flight per day to Seattle during the busy season. And this year, starting December 21st, they're going to be flying twice daily. Between Delta twice daily, Seattle twice daily, four flights a day to Seattle again. Look for some great deals on airfares with that much capacity coming into the market to Seattle.
I know so many people that use the Delta nonstop into Atlanta. It's good for business on the East Coast or for European travel. Are they adding another flight in December?
Yes, they are.
And three a day?
Right. Delta's been flying twice a day to Atlanta year-round for, a lot of years. And that flight is just does fantastic for them. I mean, they run load factors, you know, over 90% on that
route. And those
are
usually 757s or bigger aircraft.
And especially during the busy season, they do fly some 757s. And I think they're actually going to be doing that again. And starting on December 22nd this year, in addition to the two year-round flights, they are going to be adding that third daily flight to Atlanta. So, you know, great opportunities for people in Tucson to, you know, take some vacations to Europe and make those great connections they do have in Atlanta to Europe.
All right. And we had a friend on Facebook. One of our friends said, could you ask Dick about how do we get Albuquerque back in the mix again? That's a tough one, isn't it?
It is a very tough one.
I was just thinking about that one because in many ways, Tucson and Albuquerque, very similar with the way Southwest treats the market. Am I onto something there?
Yeah. And years ago when we did have flights to Albuquerque on Southwest, due to, you know, various factors, Southwest basically switched their strategy in terms of Albuquerque, and really that's what resulted in them canceling the flights between Tucson and Albuquerque. And, you know, air service development, you know, as we've talked about before, is one of those things where in order to gain a route, you have to find an airline where that route matches their strategy.
Right.
Unfortunately, with Southwest, that is just not a good fit with their strategy right now, flying from, you know, between two smaller markets like Tucson and Albuquerque. But we do continue to discuss that with other airlines, you know, who are flying smaller airplanes, because frankly, that's the problem with Southwest is with the size of aircraft they have, the route just doesn't work. And, you know, hopefully one day we'll find that right airline, but it is something that we continue to search for the right partner there.
And as long as Southwest has that hub in Denver, it really doesn't make sense, because then they look at it as Tucson, Albuquerque, Denver, or Kansas City.
Right.
And it's just, we're not on the way right now,
exactly,
the way they've got it in the strategy. When we come back, so much to talk about, an update on the 737 MAX impact. Also, this new study about does it pay off to drive up to Phoenix, and some surprising numbers that Dick Grunzel will give us on that front. But right now I want to tell our listeners, Dick, about a destination that is a great weekend destination, and it's only a three-hour drive from Tucson, and that's that Southwest New Mexico area, Silver City and Grant County. Thank you, John. You just pulled up the Silver City temperature for me. Big selling point, Dick. It's 78 degrees in Silver City, and the mile-high elevation does translate into cooler days and very pleasant nights. So we're at, what, 96? So you're going to get about at least 10 degrees cooler. We've seen some days it's been running 15 to even 20 degrees cooler in Silver City. So check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find the great places to stay. So many opportunities hiking in the Gila National Wilderness in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Be right back. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the Thursday edition. Dick Grunzel with me. It's our quarterly Tucson International Air Service Report, in the first segment going over all these really encouraging air service developments. So much activity beginning in November and December. Now, playing into this, Dick Grunzel, is, of course, the grounding of the 737 MAX. And that grounding now, boy, coming up in March of 2020, it will be 1 year.
That's right. And, you know, right now, you know, I think Southwest has adjusted their schedule to account for that through, you know,
the holidays.
Early January, is when their schedule reflects them coming back. And I think United and American are still holding out hope that they might be back in December. But
I don't think that's going to happen.
The longer it goes, the less likely it looks like.
Right.
You know, and it really is unfortunate because it you know, I referred before to the United flights to Chicago. You know, while they, you know, won't come right out and say it, I mean, I think We can infer that those United flights to Chicago would not have been suspended for a little bit of a period of time if it wasn't for the 737 MAX groundings. But the airlines, frankly, have just been scrambling to try and, do damage control. But I think for the most part, and I think this is reflective of, again, how strong our passenger numbers, our flights are that the airlines have here are doing well. So they have not really impacted us that much, which is really the good news out of the whole thing.
Because they have been shuffling things and canceling flights to a lot of markets, but I don't think we've been impacted that much through the summer.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at some of the dramatic things like Southwest just totally pulling out of Newark.
Wow.
And that I think is a direct result of the MAX because they just wanted to use airplanes to beef up their Hawaii service.
Right.
And so therefore they had to find the planes from somewhere and Newark was just not one of the better performing markets. So they just pulled them out.
And as I recall, Southwest had the commitment of at least 24 aircraft. So when you take 24 aircraft out of the mix, especially after you've just introduced the Hawaiian service, something's got to give.
Yeah. And I think Southwest actually, I think when it started, they had, I think it was 34 airplanes out of service.
Yeah.
And then they were planning on getting more throughout the year.
Right.
So that just compounds the problem.
All right. I want to talk about this new passenger retention and leakage study. In our quarterly visits over the years, we've talked about how it really doesn't make sense to drive 2 hours, sometimes depending on traffic, a lot longer than that, up to Phoenix, up to Sky Harbor.
You know, that's right. We do have the ability to do studies that shows how many people actually who live in the Tucson area drive to Phoenix to fly either out of Sky Harbor or Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport, of course. I mean, that's relatively minor, but in total, this most recent study we did, which covers the period from April of 2018 through March of 2019, so it's a full 1 year period of time, it showed that about 33% of people who fly, who live in the Tucson area, actually drive to Phoenix
to do so.
It's very disappointing. When you think about if all of those people did travel out of Tucson, how many more flights and how many more destinations we could have, because that's what it really takes to add flights is the critical mass. And with that many people driving to Phoenix, it just takes away from that.
So if you're one of the people complaining about air service and you're driving to Phoenix, well, you're part of the problem.
That's right. And I think the thing that sometimes people don't think about is it's more than just the airfare. When you look at that choice, unfortunately, the way the internet works these days, all people see is airfares. Mm-hmm. And if they can save $5 on an airfare, they'll drive to Phoenix. Well, what about the gas? What about the parking, which is a lot more expensive? Or even if you have to stay in a hotel the night before, I mean,
Dick, what did those numbers show about difference in fare?
Yeah, and this last study, which not only showed how many people drive to Phoenix, but it also studied the airfares, and what it showed is that on average, there's only a $3 one-way price difference in airfares between Tucson and Sky Harbor. During the study period, the average one-way fare out of Tucson was $213, out of Phoenix was $210.
Wow. And that's a difference too, a significant difference between your 2000. You studied this
two years ago,
and there was a little bit of so it's come down almost to complete parity.
Yeah,
2 years ago, what was it, about $36?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It was a $36 fare difference, and now it's only $3. And I think that's a testament to what low cost carriers can do to overall airfares in the market, because in that 2 year period of time, Frontier has come into the market, Allegiant has come into the market. Sun Country has come into the market. So our ability to really attract those airlines has really helped us on a number of fronts.
Folks may have seen in the paper this news about the airport unveiling a blueprint for further development around the airport. What's the bottom line on that, Dick Grenzel?
The bottom line on that is the community, business leaders and public officials really understand that the airport and the airport area is a tremendous economic driver for Tucson's economy. In fact, we did a economic impact study relating to the airport and our airport tenants, and it indicated a total economic impact to Southern Arizona of $7.4 billion. There's a lot of land around the airport, a lot of developable land within the airport for aerospace companies. Of course, Raytheon is there, Bombardier is there, and the blueprint was really designed, and it had input from business and government to really come up with a plan to maximize what we can do with the airport and the area around the airport to really accelerate that economic impact.
See if we can work a call in. Dick, slip your headset on. Oh, no, this one over here, please. And then your volume knob is the silver knob right below the desk, there, Dick. And we'll be able to hear what Jack has to say. Go ahead, Jack.
So it's just ironic you're talking about this. I just came back from Milan actually last night into Sky Harbor and then drove back to Tucson this morning. And I drive to Phoenix often for business, so the drive is not an issue. I live right off of I-10, so if I get to Tucson Airport, it takes me 25 minutes. If I go up to Sky Harbor, it's a little bit over an hour, so that's okay. But it's just because of what's happened with the MAX and what's happened with American Airlines in particular, which is what I normally fly. When I had to go to Italy last week and my wife asked how we wanted to go, I said, fine, that's something else than American. It was, happened to be Delta. And this is the third Delta flight that I've taken either overseas or somewhere else since the whole MAX thing. But that's part of it, too, is if you have to go to Europe, or I fly to Mexico City a lot, even American Airlines to Mexico City, it's easier to fly with our connecting flights. Now, you have such a chance to miss one or being canceled that I just prefer to know that I'm going to leave at a certain time out of Sky Harbor and get it done that way. And I hate to say that, but just a fact of life, I can't miss a flight overseas.
Okay, thank you, Jack.
Well, I guess I'm not sure there's any... to be quite honest, there's any greater chance that a flight might be canceled out of Sky Harbor than
right.
it is out of Tucson.
Right. I think he's thinking about the connecting flight, but there are plenty of opportunities to get that connecting flight early and allow plenty of time if you're going through Phoenix. And you can go through Tucson, Phoenix to Europe very easily.
Yes. Through Phoenix, through Dallas, through Chicago. Phoenix only has one flight to Europe. Two now. They do have flights to London and Frankfurt, but if you're going anywhere else in Europe, you are going to have to make a connection even going through Sky Harbor.
Yeah, and if Jack is using Delta, of course, Tucson nonstop Atlanta is a good way to do that. Dick Grenzel, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. What's the website, Dick?
FlyTucson.com.
And there's all sorts of good information there for you. All right. Thank you, Dick.
Thank you, Bill.
We're going to take a quick break from CBS News with bottom of the hour, a one-minute headline, and then we'll be right back. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. The following segment presented by Sierra Tucson on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Donnie Sansom is with us, the Associate Medical Director at Sierra Tucson. He's also the Director of Addictions at Sierra Tucson. Dr. Sansom, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today, Bill.
September, National Recovery Month. This is a wonderful time to talk about some really important issues, Doctor, concerning addiction, mood, anxiety disorders, and why an integrated model of care is critical in the healing process. Yet often individuals hear that some of these individuals have more than one disorder that they're struggling with. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Again, it is National Recovery Month, so we're bringing attention to the fact that recovery, often we think of recovery as being from substance use disorder, aka alcoholism, addiction, but really, there's so much more to it. There's anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder. And at Sierra Tucson, we work with patients with chronic pain, secondary eating disorder, and trauma. Developmental trauma from childhood, PTSD, with our vets, with our first responders, with individuals who just suffered life events that leave them with trauma. All of those things feed in to the addictive process and or their standalone ailments themselves. And we deal with all of that in looking at an integrated model of care for our patients.
When the traditional way of thinking is that the individual that has the disease, perhaps they will give up using drugs, or perhaps they'll give up, using alcohol. Problem solved. That's the traditional thinking. Wrong, isn't it?
It could be, yes. I mean, certainly we like to see abstinence as a part of the sobriety, but exactly, it's a good point. Because here's the thing. When I say integrated model of care, what do I mean by that? Well, you know, it's kind of a buzzword. It gets a lot of traction in various circles. It can mean what used to be called complementary alternative medicine. So things like mindfulness-based practices, yoga, nutrition, massage, naturopathic consultation. We absolutely offer all of that. But I really like the definition that SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, has, and that is that integrated care is combining the patient's physical needs with their mental health needs. And that's vitally important, because if we don't really get down to some of the causes and conditions that may be feeding into that addiction, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to help people onto a long-term path of sobriety.
Treating the whole person is kind of, that's sort of a new thinking, isn't it, in this area?
Unfortunately, it is in a lot of branches of medicine. But at Sierra Tucson, we do have a long history of looking at the individual as a person, and that's important. We look at the mind, body, and spirit. And I think it's vital to understand that when we're talking about integrative model of care.
You talked about trauma, and I want to circle back and talk a little bit about that. That doesn't normally come up, but each of these disorders, when you think about it, at the base is going to be some trauma issue usually, correct?
So frequently it is.
Very
absolutely.
Go into that a little bit. What are we talking about?
That's a great question. We focus on trauma as a trauma-informed care practice at Sierra Tucson. So what do I mean by that, to answer your question? So we know of PTSD. I think by now we understand that over the last couple of decades, that's become more in the forefront of the American lexicon and idea about people with past life trauma. But there's also this hidden realm of developmental trauma during childhood. There's some very interesting data that came out of a very large study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, the ACEs score. It's not diagnostic, but it is a risk indicator for childhood trauma. And we know that statistically, people who have a high ACE score, in other words, people who've had certain significant childhood traumatic events, are far more likely to go on to develop substance use disorder, have increased suicidality, increased mental illness, increased problems with ongoing relationships, and in fact, this is the interesting thing, really, they have a higher incidence of chronic disease because of long-term changes in their sympathetic nervous system, or the part of the nervous system that mounts the stress response.
Can you articulate a little bit what would be some of those trauma causes in childhood?
Well, when we talk about the ACE study, So it's not the normal bumps and bruises of childhood.
Okay.
It's not, you know, I lost my bike, I always got picked last at recess, skinned my knee, got held back. It's nothing like that. These are more significant things. These are, were you abused physically, emotionally, sexually? As far as sexual abuse, people kind of, they push that away, but 1 in 4 women in this country has been sexually abused, 1 in 6 men.
Wow. Wow.
That's a lot of people, and it's hidden. So that's a significant thing. Did you grow up in a socioeconomic background where, you know, you didn't feel like the family looked out for you, didn't love you? Was there someone who had substance use disorder in the family? Was there someone who had mental illness in the family? Did someone go to jail or prison? Was there divorce? That's fairly common.
My next question.
Divorce is common.
How about a divorce? And if, you know, the parents fighting, a nasty divorce or nasty before the level of divorce, is that a factor?
It absolutely can be. Divorce itself is one of the ACE questions.
Right.
And a very rough relationship. One of the questions is, did you witness your mother being physically abused? It goes so specific as to ask, did you see her being pulled around the house by her hair, being beaten?
Right.
We've extended this to know that there are other things that factor in. We've taken care of patients who have been in war-torn countries. So we've taken the original 10 questions and we use the extended 10 questions. So there's a lot of information on the ACE studies out, but if you're a primary care physician or a primary therapist, I highly recommend you start using this as a way of starting a dialogue in your office with your patients. It's important to talk about this.
Dr. Donnie Sansom is with us, Associate Medical Director. He's also the Director of Addictions at Sierra Tucson. How do you, Dr. Sansom, judge, how do you gauge improvement in your patients?
That's a great question. And of course, everybody wants to think, well, we're the best, we always do great. And there is a subjectivity to that. Is the patient's life improved? But one of the things that we do that's really exciting is that we're beginning to measure outcomes in terms of testing the patient at the beginning with certain codified and standardized psychological testing. We test them mid-treatment to see where the improvement has been. And we share this with the patients. I shared this several times this morning with my patients. Here's where you are. They'll share that with their therapist in the middle, and then we can measure that at the end. So that we're collecting data to put into a database so that we know where our strengths lie, we know where we might want to improve our therapy, and also to show our patients, hey, look at the progress you've made. This is what you've said. And we see our patients getting excited and talking at home during media time saying, hey, guess what I scored in this indices? And of course, this was you know, all Greek to them before they showed up. But that's one way we do it. And we think that that's probably ultimately the best way, is to have objectable measurements.
And that might come if it was a month, if they were staying for a month, it might come in after a couple of weeks then, huh?
Well,
the midterm evaluation.
Exactly. Yeah. We usually do it at the beginning as earning residential. Right. Midterm would be a couple weeks in,
sure.
and then essentially at post-treatment.
Is family involved along the way?
Family is involved. At Sierra Tucson, we have a very active and vital family program, and it's an important piece of this. I say that these issues tend to be, they're not spectator sports. They're sports that everybody plays, and we have a deep bench. I mean, these things affect virtually every member of the family in terms of one person having a substance use disorder or severe anxiety or depression or mental illness of other variety. Well, the rest of the family tends to suffer, react,
sure.
Compensate, emote, and oftentimes there's dysfunction that develops in the communication style. And so it's important to be able to have a place where you can learn and essentially flesh that out. And that's what we do in a comforting and guided way at Sierra Tucson.
Is there somebody to talk to at this 800 number, 842-4487?
There absolutely is. And we are, that number is always open, and we're willing to talk and listen and help guide you in your process in healing.
And the website too, sierratucson.com.
Yep, we got a great website. We have a lot of information. We have a lot of webinars. We have a lot of information about our staff and about the treatments that we use and the facilities. And so, you know, our work is never done. But if we can ever work ourselves out of a job, that'll be the success, right?
Dr. Sansom, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Buckmaster Show continues right after this. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends over at Green Things, that 13-acre site, chock full of course, beautiful plants, but also They have the five shops at Zocalo Village, all that great merchandise at Zocalo from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Just some beautiful furniture. A lot of it is handcrafted. So it's some beautiful things over there. Check it out and check out their website, greenthingsaz.com, for more information about Green Things and Zocalo. Dr. Mark Sykes is with us. He is the CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, and he has been involved with PSI for quite a while. In fact, PSI's mission as a nonprofit now is spanning more than 40 years, so four decades engaged in the exploration of the solar system. Mark, how are you?
Great, great.
What is this about this mysterious interstellar comet discovered last month by a Russian astronomer named Borisov?
Borisov. absolutely amazing. I mean, a year ago, we were talking about Oumuamua, which was the first interstellar object to be discovered flying through the solar system, and that or a couple of years ago, the possibly shaped like a cigar or a pancake, you know, so something very odd. And now we have, and that looked like an asteroid. There wasn't any fuzz around it. Now we've got a comet flying through the solar system that will be passing through the ecliptic plane in December. And it's all fuzzy. It's got a tail, just like a regular comet. But it came from another star. So the opportunity, particularly at this point in time, when we're discovering thousands of planets around other stars, you're discovering thousands of other solar systems, to be able to actually have an opportunity to study small objects from these other places. We don't know where exactly, but just from any other place, to see to what extent it's different or the same as similar objects in our solar system, which gives us some good data about, you know, how different are these different solar systems.
So is this comet a very small comet or small object?
I think it is relatively small. Yeah. You know, I think Oumuamua was no bigger than a kilometer, you know, probably half that.
But now that we're picking these up, I mean, is this something that they've been out there all the time, but we just haven't had the equipment to see them, or?
Well, that's an interesting question because this isn't now when LSST comes on board, you know, big glass looking deep into the sky.
Yeah.
You'd think that that's when we start seeing these things, but no, these are the last one was found by an amateur. I mean, he had a good telescope, yeah, but it wasn't, you know, like a 10 meter.
Uh-huh.
And so you know, no, it's just luck of the draw, I guess.
What about first water being detected on a potentially habitable planet? This was an interesting story.
Yeah, there's a planet orbiting another star that some scientists were able to get some spectra of it using Hubble, and they detected evidence of a water vapor in it. It's in the Goldilocks zone, so it's not too hot, not too cold. It's a little, it'd be a little uncomfortable to walk around on because I think it's like eight times the mass of the Earth. But yeah, they found evidence of water, which is, you know, water's a common a molecule, you know, in anywhere in the universe,
including Mars, right?
Oh, well, of course, Mars. So finding it in the atmosphere of another planet is great, and once JWST gets launched, it's going to be giving us a lot more detailed information about the chemistry of these exoplanets, these planets run in other solar systems, and we're going to start learning an awful lot about the range of planets. I mean, we got more than just the objects in our own solar system. Now we'll have thousands of other objects to study.
This is 100 light years away, this one we're talking about.
It's in the neighborhood.
My goodness. Your trip to Washington recently, what was the bottom line? What are you hearing?
Oh, well, gosh, I was there for a variety of reasons.
I know you were. On space business.
Yeah, I was on space business. We're working with China on some missions, PSI is, and there's other issues involving the how NASA archives its data and such. So it was a working trip back there to talk to a bunch of people from the vice president's office to the Hill to NASA headquarters. So
You had mentioned when you gave the letters of this telescope that's going to be launched. When is that? You mentioned what was the telescope?
Oh, JWST.
Yes,
I'm sorry, James Webb Space Telescope.
Thank you. And I just thought I would clarify that for our listeners.
$9 or $10 billion, you know, started out at $1 billion.
Whoa.
Well, a few cost overruns over the decade.
And when is this to be launched?
I think it's now scheduled for launch in 2021. So, and you know, hopefully it will all work well, because it should be a spectacular instrument once it's flying.
One of your scientists at the Planetary Science Institute has been writing about a huge volcano on Jupiter's moon, and an eruption apparently happens on a pretty regular schedule.
Yeah, that was really interesting for her to discover that. Julie Rathbun is one of our senior scientists. She lives in New York. And she's been studying Io. That's the volcano moon around Jupiter. It's the largest Galilean satellite closest to, or not the largest, but it's the closest to Jupiter. And she discovered that this major volcano on there that's been observed to erupt in the past by Voyager and Galileo seemed to have a regular eruption cycle. And so she was predicting that it should erupt sometime this week.
Really?
And so, yeah, we're waiting to watch it go off.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I often say this with you: there are no dumb questions when it comes. At least when I'm on this side of the of the table interviewing you, and I'm just wondering, how in the heck does your senior scientist, Julie Rathbun, how did she come to that conclusion? How do you figure out what an eruption schedule is going to be like?
Well, you study it remotely, you know, the ground-based telescopes in the infrared, so you're watching the thermal plume, because when it erupts, it gets brighter at wavelengths that are from hot material. Mm-hmm. And so she's looked at data that's been obtained from ground-based telescopes and space-based telescopes and put it all together and says, I see a pattern.
Mm. So. And this, based on what she's come up with, I guess it appears to be every 475 days. That's
takes a while to figure out.
Pretty accurate. Well, we're going to know if Julie is right on here, because...
Well, there's a little bit of blur in there. It's not egg clock or something that you're baking cookies. You know, there's probably slop of a few months on either side of that.
So. But when it happens, we'll know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If people are looking at it, and she is looking at it.
I bet. Okay. And for folks who don't know, you do a tremendous amount of research right here in Tucson.
Oh, yeah.
And your scientists really are all over the world who work remotely.
We're in 29 states, D.C., and about 11 countries.
And Planetary Science Institute is an economic driver for Tucson, isn't it, Mark?
Oh, yeah. I know we bring in, I think last year, $15 million.
Wow.
And then, of course, you multiply that up when people are using it for, you know, shopping and, you know, paying for bills and all that kind of stuff. So, it's good paying work, highly educated people. And, that's great.
And it's private sector. There aren't many really groups like Planetary Science Institute, right?
No. I mean, you have universities, you know, like we have,
of course,
the University of Arizona. Yeah. But in terms of private companies that are engaged in things like solar system exploration, mm-hmm. not a whole lot of them out there.
No, there are not.
But it's great fun. You know, we've got over 150 people now, you know, working on supporting NASA and its missions and basic research and also working with other countries on their missions.
Well, we're glad that Planetary Science Institute is in Tucson.
Where it was founded.
There you go.
Below these many years.
There you go. Mark Sykes, always a pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Bill.
And I do want to point out that if folks would like more information about the Planetary Science Institute, their website is psi.edu.
Got it right. There you go. I'm a member, by the way, and it's easy to be a member, isn't it, Mark? It doesn't cost a lot of money, and it kind of helps things out to have some local
absolutely.
People that are on board. All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show today. Thank you to Mark Sykes and to John Couch on the other side of the glass, making sure all the buttons are illuminated and are pushed in the right way, right? There you go. All right. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.